Have you heard the news? Basic Folk is now an official production of The Bluegrass Situation. We're leveling up on our folk pod game with our besties at BGS with a new logo, theme song, and a brand new attitude.
That's right, except I have the same bad attitude as last year. And our honest conversations with folk musicians continue to dignify under-the-radar roots musicians.
2025 is off to a great start with episodes featuring Jerry Douglas.
Every 15 to 20 years in bluegrass music, there is a renaissance period, and I believe we're in one right now.
Lou Tallo.
The act of writing and creativity is my meditation practice.
And Carolyn Kendrick.
The most important thing is, like, how do we try to mitigate harm?
Find us where you get your shows or at thebluegrasssituation.com. Thanks for listening, and welcome to Basic Folk.
Hello, my name is Olivia Harding, and I am the host of Folk Files, a podcast that explores the tangled history of folk songs. Every month, I choose a topic to dive into for about 20 to 30 minutes. The subject of each episode could be a song. In the case of Shady Grove, a lot of people believe that it is a later version of the English folk song Matty Groves, but it's not that simple. A general topic. The main theme that I saw while researching folk songs about birds from all over the world is that many of them include nonsense syllables meant to represent the bird songs.
Or a question that I want to answer. There has never been any real question that Black people were central to the development of this musical style. So why do we still picture white men hauling on the rope when we think of sea shanties? Folk Files is available everywhere you listen to podcasts. Press play and join me on a journey through the origins of murder ballads, sea shanties, rebel songs, and other music that has withstood the test of time.
Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation. Hello, it's me, Cindy House. I host this podcast. So nice to have you here. Happy almost Valentine's Day is well in the past by the time you're listening to this episode, but regardless, hello. I hope you had a lovely day filled with warmth and love and feeling like you belong, because you do. You belong. You belong here at Basic Folk. We're so glad to have you. Hope you're hanging in there. Okay, before we get into our guest today, Sam Moss, let's talk about ways we can stay in touch. And the best way to do that is by signing up for Basic Folk's monthly newsletter. You can do that at the link in the show notes or go to basicfolk.com. You can also follow us on social media. Hey, I joined that Blue Sky thing, which looks like old school Twitter. So we'll be posting about the podcast there as well. We are on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Blue Sky at Basic Folk Pod. You can also sign up to be a monthly contributor and help pay for your Basic Folk listening. It is free to listen and will continue to be free to listen, but it is not free to produce. So help us out. Lend a hand. You can give $5 a month, get a Basic Folk beanie with the brand new logo. Check that out at the link in the show notes or go to basicfolk.com. So maybe 2025 is not going that great for you so far, and you need some soothing, nice music. I think the guy for you is Sam Moss and his new album. Although Sam is not a great swimmer, he named his latest album Swimming. The folk singer with a gentle demeanor is back with thoughtful songs and captivating melodies. Hailing from New England, Sam has carved out a unique niche in the folk world, blending naturalistic themes with an introspective approach to songwriting. We explore how his New England roots continue to influence his music, despite his current residence being in the state of Virginia, and how his upbringing in a family of visual artists has shaped his artistic sensibilities. Sam also talks about how movement and and the natural world inspire his songwriting, if not with more oblique lyrics. We dig into his latest album, Swimming, where he boldly embraces more direct lyrical expressions. We discuss the balance between mood and narrative in his work, too. Our basic folk conversation touches on his journey from a shy young musician to a confident performer as well, thanks in part to the encouragement of close friends like Jackson Emmer. He counts Emmer, who he played with in an old-time duo, the Howling Kettles, as one of his greatest inspirations for following his own creative arrow in music. Elsewhere in the episode, we explore Sam's passion for woodworking, a skill he honed as a respite from musical burnout. He describes the satisfaction of crafting tangible objects and how this practice complements his musical endeavors. We also really dive into his feelings around the word gentle, which is often used to describe his music and persona. He doesn't actually mind being known as a gentle person and hopes that in addition to finding his music soft and tender, that people feel his music leaves a lasting impact. Well, I'll say for myself, it has certainly left a lasting impact on me. I love this new record. We're going to take a listen to a song from the new album, Swimming, Dance, and then we'll get to our conversation with Sam Moss on Basic Folk.
Dancing all the night long, dancing to forget how easy dancing comes to me when the day falls out wrong, when I long to blank the mind. Hang my head to weep, cheek to cheek with the floorboards creaking, stumbling in and out of time. I dance to forget pain, I dance to remember beauty. Remember now to be so vain, and I dance to hold you close to me.
Sam Moss, welcome to Basic Folk.
Thanks so much for having me.
You are from Connecticut. What town are you from?
I'm from West Hartford.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm from Walpole, Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
So I am semi-familiar with Connecticut. So you moved around a bit, like within New England and the Upper East. You're now in Virginia.
Yes.
I looked up how to say the name of your town, and I know I'll mess it up. Can you say it?
Stanton.
Stanton, Virginia.
Yep.
Nathan Salzberg wrote something about your new record and said of your albums, they don't wear out their welcome. He's a modest and very hospitable host. I'm inclined to attribute this at least partially to his Yankeedom, New England born, although he resides in Virginia now, and the particular, peculiar granite reserve that comes with that territory of New England. So what do you think about that? Like, how does your New England vibe continue to follow you around?
I don't really think about it much these days, but somebody like Nathan will point it out to me because I think he like sees me as a very like New England man, which I guess I am. That's a really good question that I haven't considered very much as of late. I mean, I like growing up in Connecticut, it was a totally decent place to grow up. And
sure.
But yeah, it doesn't like, it is not a state brimming with state pride in the way that some other places I have been are. And like, you know, people don't get psyched on living there like people do in Maine.
I'm in Maine right now.
Okay.
Everybody loves it. We are loving it.
Yeah.
Being in Maine and, mm-hmm. and saying we're in Maine.
Yeah.
And I can't say I'm a Mainer because I wasn't born here, but
yeah.
I feel pride of Maine. And also, before Maine, I lived in Pittsburgh, which is also a very, like, very proud area.
Yeah.
Connecticut, not so much.
Yeah. One thing that's always been strange to me is that I So I did grow up there. I lived there until I was 18. And then I like went to school in Boston, and then I moved to Vermont for 3 or 4 years. And I think this says something about Vermont, that like a lot of people assume that I'm from Vermont now, which is not something I've ever tried to do. But it wasn't, you know, it was in my bio for a few years that I lived in Brattleboro. And I did, and I changed.
Born and raised.
I changed that a decade ago. And yet, I don't know, it must be something about me that reads as Vermont-y.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Definitely.
I'm not, it doesn't.
Your vibe, to me, reads more Vermont than Connecticut.
And I know that that's a compliment.
Right? The highest.
Yeah, right. I'll choose to take it as one. But this is all to say, what is this all to say? I don't know. I don't go to Connecticut anymore. My family doesn't live there. Most of them have left, and my folks live in New Hampshire now, and I've kind of adopted that more as like my hometown.
How long have they lived there?
Like 10 years.
Okay.
But they live in a tight-knit, like, small town, and it feels homey. It feels like where they've always belonged, so I feel a sense of belonging there as well.
Like, what's Connecticut's state motto, do you know?
State motto? Let's see. Well, it's the Nutmeg State. The license plate says the Constitution State.
Oh, I found it in Latin.
Oh, good. Yeah.
He who transplanted still sustains. Wow.
That's deep.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Thanks for answering that question. I am well informed now.
How did you find out I was from Connecticut?
You'll find that I found many things about you that you'll wonder where I found them.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I'm ready for it.
It was tough, I will say. Mm-hmm. You are a man of mystery. There's not a lot of info about you online.
Cool.
Yes. So let's keep going.
Yes.
You are somebody who has a lot of natural elements in your writing and in your album covers. What's been your relationship to the outside world, and like, how does that relationship match the tone of your music?
I think I like in the songs that I guess that's been like a through line for many years and the kind of stuff I write. And while there have been some like rare exceptions of like city scenes showing up, I'm not like a radically outdoorsy person. You know, I don't spend like hours and hours a day wandering through the woods. That is when my head is most clear. And so perhaps I think I get a lot of my ideas when I am walking. And when I am walking, I am surrounded by the outside world. And so maybe it's just that all those metaphors are surrounding me and they're just there for the taking more easily. I don't tend to write songs that are populated with a lot of people. At most, it's like a one or two. I think that's true. I think part of the naturalistic quality is also just a way to kind of fill out the picture of the song. And a lot of my work, I think, tends to be a little more like mood and atmosphere based rather than story based. I'm not like a big like plot guy or anything like that. So
is that just in terms of the art that you create? Like, do you enjoy ingesting art that doesn't have a plot but just has a mood?
Yeah, I think the like highbrow version of myself really loves reading books that don't go anywhere and watching films that are like quiet and slow moving. But I also, you know, I can get deep into a plot. I can watch a blockbuster.
The other night, for the first time, I watched A River Runs Through It, which I found to be sort of like in that category. If you haven't seen it, I think you would really like it.
Yeah.
There is a lot of nature in it, although you don't have to participate. You're just watching it on film.
Yeah.
But it's Brad Pitt is in this film, A River Runs Through It. It's from the turn of the century, or it's from the 20th century. I think the late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, yeah. I looked it up. But, oh, man.
Yes.
They're wearing great hats.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Amazing hats and also lots of fly fishing.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a film that you're sort of like watching it. And it kind of like makes sense with what you're saying about your own art, where you're like, this is just really lovely to watch or listen to. But I'm, you know, it's more nuanced, like the meanings are more nuanced and stuff. I have a couple questions that have stemmed from listening to you answer that question. And one of them is about moving. You said you get a lot of your ideas when you're moving. And that makes me think about the song Dance on your new record, where you wrote, it's a song for dark times. It pays tribute to the joy of dancing at home, a song for moving through the sorrow. And it's about the way that like movement heals. And for me as well, like you say, you get a lot of your ideas when you're walking. That also happens to me. So like movement is sort of like inspiration for, it's like activation in your brain. Like my yoga teacher also once said that movement is lubrication for the joints, which is a funny sentence, but I never got over it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like something like when you are upset about something or you're panicking, a good idea is to like pivot or like move forward. That can be really beneficial versus that like the focusing on the hard times or focusing on the thing that's making you panic. So how have you learned about like movement as a healer? Like what has that looked like for you?
For one, when I think back over the work I've written in the last decade, okay, the first thing that comes to mind is like my most fruitful creative times were during my most like physically active times, which isn't like going to the gym. It's just like taking really long walks. And I think what I've learned that I don't always honor presently, but what I have learned is that when I'm like creatively stuck, or stuck in any way, emotionally stuck, like the best thing I can do is like go outside and walk. I get very caught at home. Like I'm like a projects person. I mean, I have like songs I'm working on. And I always have like some broken instrument I'm fixing and like some other like woodworking projects and like things to fix around the house, and then like prospective carpentry jobs to like tend to. And I can just kind of end up like bouncing back and forth between all those things in a very unsatisfying way throughout the course of a day or a week or a month. So the only way I can get myself to not do that is generally to take a walk. That's the only thing that works for me. because if I'm not moving, then I feel that I have to be doing something, and I'm quite bad at like standing still and like pondering.
Mm-hmm.
I like to have my hands moving. So
what's like the ideal walk?
The ideal walk is, well, the ideal walk is in the winter, definitely.
Okay.
Not the like brutal winter. I'm not, okay. You know, I'm not into single digits. Like I don't, that's, it's okay. I am like a winter person more so than most people, I think. I do like the cold, and I find I can think better when it is cold out.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. Your brain isn't all bogged down with humidity.
You're trying to survive.
Yeah. Yeah, it keeps things sharp.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it's always felt for me. I always kind of like, I wilt in the summer, and then I like slowly come back to life in October. And then I like, you know, peak sometime, like around, I don't know, April. I don't know if there's only one kind of ideal walk. Here in Stanton, there's a park near us that like, is both like a very mild hike because it's kind of just like it's just a hill. And there are a lot of trees to look at and not very many people. So that's like a regular walk that I can enjoy. The most ideal walk is like one that goes to places I haven't been to before.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something
that's a cool answer.
I miss that about living, like when I lived in Somerville, like I could just
Somerville. Let's talk about the best place in the world.
Yeah. You could really walk for, you know, there are infinite pathways around, mm-hmm. and things to see, and you know, it's very different than walking through the woods, but like just as engaging. And so like a slight sense of getting lost is something I love. I took a walk in our park the other day and walked down some woodsy trails I had never been down, and like totally got turned around, and like, which is an experience I hadn't had in too long. It kind of like woke me up.
Sam Moss loves to be cold and loves to be lost. These are things we're learning.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, I like to like come inside to a warm house.
Oh, that's obviously, that's why you get cold in the first place.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the main point.
Yeah.
The other question that was coming to me when we were talking about nature and the river runs through it, hmm. and enjoying and creating art that is a little bit more nuanced. The song Swimming, the title track for the new record. Here's what I found out about that song. That song focuses on holding contradictions within the self. And you said, I don't know that I've ever written a song that so plainly states its thesis in the chorus, which makes me somewhat uncomfortable. Which is all making sense after hearing your comments about wanting to make more subtle art.
Hmm.
So here's the chorus. I think this is the chorus. I listened to the song like 17 times. So this is what I
hope you could. I hope you could find it.
Yeah, totally. To be out of my depth, but somehow swimming. Very revealing.
Oh, yeah.
It's like that, those two, that seem like very relatable lines. Like, yeah. Why does it make you feel uncomfortable? Why do those direct lines feel so uncomfortable to you?
You know, when you say them back to me now, it like doesn't, I think the person who would be uncomfortable with that is like a version of myself from the past. Yeah, like that, okay, that chorus is like, yeah, probably pretty relatable, not like a, not a radical thought, like a thought that, you know, people of all ages could agree upon.
Like, it doesn't sound like Tori Amos wrote that line.
I know, I have a long way to go toward letting it all out. In my earliest songwriting attempts, the thing that I always needed was to like obscure myself in lyrics. And so that, you know, made first a lot of murky poetry.
Why do you think you thought that was necessary?
Because I am a private person. And in my, you know, early 20s, I think I was like, not comfortable with myself, and not comfortable with anybody else knowing anything about me. And yet I still chose to write songs.
Since doing these interviews, I've come across a handful of musicians who are like introverted, shy, and yet they have this like thing inside of them,
yeah.
that makes them want to, it's like a very special class of singer-songwriters, I think.
Yeah, it doesn't quite make sense. I mean, everybody has like different lines that they can, you know, that they feel they can't cross. And for me, for a long time, it was like singing in front of anybody. I grew up playing music and performing, in bands and orchestras and stuff, and like
I found out one of the names of your rock bands in high school.
Holy shit. Damn.
You want me to say it?
Yeah.
Sam was in a band, and was it high school or middle school? I think it might have been middle school.
Yeah.
It was called it was probably middle school because of the name. The name was After Three.
How did you find that?
Did you practice After Three? I had to Google Sam Moss music, New England, the name of the name of your old time country folk duo.
Yeah.
And then I would find interviews.
Oh, where it somehow came up, like,
yeah,
right. Because when I was like 22 and did some interview, maybe back then I was bringing up my middle school band.
I think so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Good.
Anyways,
good
please
research.
Continue. Thank you.
No, sorry.
This is now how I spent my day.
Now I'm just thinking back to my middle school band. yeah, that's a whole nother universe. But yeah,
you were not singing in the middle school band.
I was not. I was sort of like dipping my toes into songwriting. Like, I did a little bit of singing in the band, but then, like, I don't know, I got kind of scared or something. Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up in like doing choir in school or anything. And I just didn't see myself as a singer. So I just kind of like, even though I kind of wanted to, I don't know, by the time I was really interested in singing, I was in middle school. So it felt probably just devastatingly embarrassing to even think about, like,
too old to start singing.
Yeah. Like
in middle school,
wanting to sing is, at that point, when everything is embarrassing, that's a really embarrassing thought. So, so yeah, I kind of just did that on my own for the next 10 years or so. And eventually
you're writing,
got over it. A little bit of writing. I mean,
yeah,
occasional like writing songs and throwing them in the trash.
And yeah. Then, I'd love to hear more about, your time with Jackson, your friend and, who was in that old-time country duo, Jackson Emmer. Yeah. I think when you were in Vermont, you had this duo, and he really pushed you to pursue your own songwriting. This sounds really fun, these sessions of you two, where you said, I played guitar and fiddle, he played mandolin and guitar. We'd both sing sloppy renditions of early American music, and that got me more comfortable singing, which sounds so fun. How did the practice of playing and singing with Jackson give you the confidence and experience to pursue your own?
Yeah, Jackson is an important person in my life musically and as a friend. And he and I started playing together when, like, in college years. And he was someone who was, like, a very charismatic performer and a comfortable one. And he still is. And, like, and we ended up playing in some groups together, being next to him, kind of watching him, like, be comfortable on stage, singing and playing, and also just, like, being less serious and less, like, overly concerned with everything being, like, just so.
What was his delivery like, if you could compare it to somebody?
His delivery?
Yeah, like his musical performance. What was his stage presence like?
Well, I'll say, like, back...
Like a Muppet?
No, he's not quite Muppet. No, I mean, he was, like, in... When we had our group together, our duo together, I don't know, he was kind of, like, somewhere between, like, John Hartford and Tom Waits.
Yeah,
he wasn't,
good
like...
combo.
Yeah, he wasn't, like, a, you know... He wasn't like a comedian up there, but he was a, you know, there was a lightness and a willingness to engage with the audience and an interest in engaging with the audience and like, and a spontaneity to playing, which, and all of those things were like different than how I approached playing.
But you can hear, I can, on the new record, even like I can hear that influence, like his good work he did with you. On the new record, because there are some parts where it is more playful and dark and weird. I feel like, yeah, I agree with you. Jackson was really good for you.
Yeah. He was one of the first people who I started sharing songs I had written with, and he was just, you know, he was encouraging of that, and in the couple years we lived together in Brattleboro, we both, like, we had this country bluegrass duo thing that was, like, kind of our main gig, and we played, like, anywhere and everywhere with that group, farmers markets. Bars, house parties, yeah. Stuff. It was an anything. Like we would go anywhere kind of band. And that like kept our rent paid. And then we also were both working on writing songs, which is something he had been doing for a while, and I was kind of just getting more into. And it was a really formative time because he was someone I could bounce my work off of and someone that I trusted, and I'm way less uptight than I was back then.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think so. God, I hope so.
And I think another huge character in your life was your grandfather. Would you mind talking about him?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's my question. So here's your grandpa. His musical preference were big bands. He was one of the main reasons that you wanted to play music when you were, like, little. You actually wanted to play the clarinet, just like Benny Goodman, which is unbelievable. of your grandfather, you said he was an artist, and he used to have a cymbal in his studio so that he could keep time while blasting his records, like on like a foot cymbal or like with a drumstick.
Yeah, with a yeah. I mean, for him, it was more like the back end of a paintbrush. but just like a ride cymbal. Yeah, because
what a cool dude. What was it about your grandfather's love of jazz and big bands that was so infectious?
My earliest memory of music, probably my earliest memory of music was. Was with him, and I was probably 5 or so, and he had like put on probably Benny Goodman record at my parents' place, and he was probably like drumming on, you know, the sofa or whatever, and I was drumming on his feet, sitting on the floor, and it just I think what spoke to me was like how happy the music made him, and then. How happy it made me, and like I mean that music can be so joyful, and like exciting to listen to, and he was somebody who as a teenager wanted to be a jazz drummer, and then his mom decided that was too risky and that he should go to art school instead, which is a funny. Yeah. I don't know. The 30s. It was a different time.
I love that, though.
Yeah. Me too. He did have a pretty tame career as an artist, I will say. But nonetheless, I think that, like, learning about that, which I probably didn't know until a bit later, like, I don't know, it just made a connection for me between, like, between music and art, and like I grew up in a family of visual artists, so I understood that like music was an art form, and I was supported by my parents in like, you know, taking lessons and things like that. But
that's cool to hear that you came from a family of visual artists, because it seems like throughout your albums there is like such cohesion in the album artwork. Just a comment.
Yeah, it's well the with the exception of the newest album,
still cohesion.
Yeah, it's cohesion, but the previous three, those cover drawings were all done by my brother. This new one is done by a friend of mine. It is still like in the world, in the world of, but I was very much raised in like a visual household, and both my parents and my brother and one of my grandfathers all, you know, pursued careers in arts, and one of my aunts was a painter, and like, you know, there's just a lot of that, and not really much in the way of music. So I was a little more on my own, I suppose.
Black sheep.
Yeah, I guess so. I know. The like weird kid who wants to be a musician instead of a potter.
Right.
But so I think I was drawn to my grandfather because even though he never became a jazz drummer, his love of music was so deep. And really so focused, which was cool. He just like, he really loved swing so much.
What do you think of the 90s revival?
Like
Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, Brian Setzer.
The like amped up revival.
Yeah. Not the amped up, just the Brian Setzer and Big Bad Voodoo Daddy aren't so amped up. Like Mighty Mighty Boss Stones maybe would have been too much for him.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody ever turned him on to that stuff. I was too, you know, I was a boy.
It's so funny to me that like you were like, I want to play clarinet and I want to be like Benny Goodman. Like Benny Goodman seems so far from the music that you're making now. Like, what did it look like when you hate to break it to you, but the swing is different from Sam Moss.
I thought this was a hot jazz record.
Yeah. But like, what did it look like when you started to like formulate your own taste as a listener and as a player in music, and like what and decided like you started deciding like, oh, this is like the type of music that I want to make?
Yeah, I think it was a pretty long road to. Like, okay, if we start with me wanting to play clarinet, then the next thing that happened is I expressed my interest and we were advised that I should play violin or piano instead. I was like 7 years old and I didn't have any front teeth at the time.
That'd be difficult.
Yeah. So
clarinet is all teeth.
Yeah. So I've heard. So I ended up starting on violin and I did actually play clarinet for like a year in elementary school band. And I think I imagined that I would pick it up and I would be good at it.
Yeah. Hard.
I was not good. And so like the dreams of being like Benny Goodman just sort of withered.
It's kind of not fair to have that be your first reference for clarinet.
Yeah. He's kind of the guy. I got over that pretty easily. But it took me a while to like figure out where I fit. Like I studied classical violin for some years and like I think I liked music or I knew I loved music, but like I didn't necessarily feel like what I was doing was the thing that made sense. I really liked just like improvising on my violin rather than like learning the prescribed material. Mm-hmm. But when I picked up guitar in middle school, that was partially because like my dad really liked like 80s like electric blues stuff, like Stevie Ray Vaughan type of folks. And so once again, I think I was drawn to like virtuostic, noodly playing, and so I thought maybe I could do that on guitar instead, which also didn't quite pan out.
But you can do it
in my
and
own
have done it
in my own way.
Yeah, I was listening to a deep cut on one of your back catalog, and I was like, holy shit!
Oh shit!
Sam needs to calm down. Like it's. It's impressive.
Thanks. It's always, I like to shred a little bit.
That's right.
Just a little bit. Not much. Yep.
This is a good time to transition into this topic. Like, I think a word that gets thrown around a lot when people describe your music is the word gentle and like gentle adjacent words.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about gentle? Like, what is your history with being gentle, especially like in being a man, being a boy in a world that is not always that way?
In my music and also in my life, that is a word that has been used to describe me, which is not something that I mind. Musically, it's like any like element of gentleness is not explicitly intended. I guess it just kind of is who I am. I think the only thing that I like bristle at when I hear gentle as a descriptor is like, and this isn't like, this is like a thing on me, is like I want the work that I make to be like impactful, you know, gentle is like adjacent to like easy listening, which is adjacent to like elevator music, which is not like, which I'm not opposed actually to any of those things. And like background music is great. Music to fall asleep to is great. But like, I'm like grateful that people can listen to my work and feel relaxed. But my aim is not that. I guess it's just like, I don't know. I'm just kind of soft, you know? So I can't fight it.
Right.
I'm happy to be a gentle person, though.
You are.
Very pro-gentle person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, can we go a little bit deeper on that? Like, how you might relate to your masculinity and being a gentleman in our patriarchal society?
Yeah. I think I have long been someone who has been told that like my qualities as a man are like not the usual, where if the usual is considered like the toxic macho man, which like I don't know if that's fair.
He won't go away. We thought we were done with him, but he just won't go away, that toxic man.
He's around, I guess. I don't know. But it's not something I spend a lot of time thinking about, but like I certainly get to benefit from all of the privileges I get from like, you know, being me, being just like, you know, straight white guy. It's like, I don't have a lot of, I don't have much to worry about out in the world. But I also don't really, I identify as like a man. It is not an identity that calls strongly to me. I think of myself as like a person.
I feel that.
Yeah.
Like a very neutral.
I feel pretty neutral. I feel comfortable in my skin, I guess. But this is like a question that I feel that I would have to like most questions people ask me, I would have to think about for a long time and then write about very slowly.
What kind of friend are you? Because your friends really like you. Like, there are so many nice quotes about your music. That write-up that Nathan did about your album.
It's really sweet.
It's so lovely. Like, you play with so many people who I also recognize their names and sort of, like, gold star them in their humanness. But you just seem like you surround yourself with such wonderful people who, like, freely say really nice things about you, which makes me want to know what kind of friend you are, how you make friends, and what's important to you about being a friend.
Man, you're really going deep, Cindy. That's great.
Sorry.
No, yeah. I thought you were just going to, like, ask me what my favorite songwriters were.
I already know who they are. Nick Drake and Bob Dylan. Next.
It's funny, I have really surrounded myself with wonderful people.
Yeah, good work.
I've done a really good job. I will congratulate myself for that.
Yes.
That is not an accident. I mean, the friends I've made through music, you know, the ones who are like kind of all over the country and, you know, that I don't see very much, but that are very important people to me. I mean, in most cases, those friendships have started because of, you know, a mutual familiarity with the other's music, and some kind of shared interest or respect in that. And I think that, like, that is a pretty good way to find people who you are going to understand and who are going to understand you. But, I mean, you know, I really feel like, I feel that I am not the best friend, like, in relationships. You know, there's always, like, one friend who's better at being, you know, there's one friend who's better at, like, reaching out, for instance. There's always one. And it's usually, I feel like it's usually...
It's me and I'm exhausted.
Yeah, you're the reacher-outer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Sounds like a lot of work. I try. I don't think I have a reputation for being like elusive, or maybe I do have a reputation for being elusive, but I'm not unreliable. I don't think. This is hard to judge my qualities as a friend, but when I meet someone I care about, I think I generally make a point to not lose track of them. I'm just scanning through my memory to see if that's true. Probably after this call, I'm gonna text a bunch of my friends that I'm over that I haven't reached out to in too long.
If we accomplish anything today,
yeah,
it's that Sam reaches out to his friends.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your woodworking.
Yeah.
You're a known woodworker. You sell your wares on your website.
I do.
Beautiful spoons, stools, scoops, bottles. Really good stuff.
Thank you.
I'm interested in learning, like, how do you equate your confidence in your woodworking skills with your music skills? Like, how do they live in parallel? Like, did they develop differently? Was the advancement faster in one than the other? Like, what is the curiosity like in both fields?
I began, like, woodworking in earnest in my mid-20s. Yeah, that's about right. I'm 35 now. You probably know that somehow from your research.
I actually did not find your date of birth.
Oh, cool. Great.
It's not out there.
We'll keep it a mystery. but I am 35. And... In some ways, like, my relationship with woodworking came about kind of as a reaction to being stuck in my musical life, feeling stuck, feeling maybe a little bit burnt out, and unsure of how I wanted to proceed. And
when did this start?
That started when I was let's see. So I grew up with a father who's a woodworker, not by profession, but as a quite serious hobby and occasional side hustle. And so I spent a lot of time, like, hanging out in his workshop, though I didn't really do stuff. I just kind of would, like, check in on him, and he would explain to me what he was up to. And so I think... I absorbed a pretty good amount of information just by being there. And also, I grew up in a house where if there was something wrong with the house, it was usually fixed by the people who lived in it. I just kind of, like, organically developed a few skills. I don't know, the knowledge of how to hold a hammer at a youngish age, even though I wasn't drawn to that work in any particular way. So that's all to say, like, there's some foundation that I kind of accidentally built while I was pursuing a life in music. And I think that, like, gave me a sense that, like, I was somebody who could, like, fix things, and, like, I was just a bit handy. And in, I want to say, when I was maybe 27, 28, I was living in Somerville, needing work, and Dietrich Strauss, who maybe you have interviewed.
The best. Yeah. Dietrich actually composes our theme song.
Yeah.
And all of the little vignettes in between the episodes.
I haven't seen him in a very long time. But in that time, we were both living in the area. And he, as you know, is also a musician and woodworker. And and he had started, like, he had been picking up odd jobs through the app TaskRabbit. Do you know this app?
Yes.
Where you can, like, hire someone to do anything. And he suggested that I, like, start doing that. And so that was what began to launch me down this path of, like, being kind of an odd job guy. I mean, I really had to build, like, a lot of IKEA furniture for people because that's what a lot of folks around Boston wanted done.
Damn.
Yeah, I got really, really good at it. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was, that was odd, but that did help get me by. And in between all that, I would get hired sometimes to, like, fix funky old things in people's weird old houses in Cambridge. And I really liked that. And that just gradually became a real part of my life and something I really enjoyed, and something that felt practical. And I was at a time when I wasn't enjoying being on tour as much as I had been. And so it felt like a great way to, like, enable me to be home. And sometime around then, I decided to carve a spoon on a whim as a gift. And, you know, what I made wasn't very good, but I liked it, like, immediately. Mm-hmm. The process of carving, I didn't know what I was doing, but it, I kind of loved that I didn't know what I was doing. And it felt, perhaps unsurprisingly, because I come from a family of craftspeople, it felt really natural to be making something that was going to be both artful and useful. And like, that's baked into me. And I after making a handful of them, I felt like I had maybe, like, found my medium. I dabbled in a lot of different art growing up, but nothing, like, totally grabbed me. But once I, like, really started working with wood, I don't know, it just felt like the thing that made sense to me more than anything else I've touched. I mean, in some ways it makes more sense to me than music does. Even though I know less about it still. Because I, you know, I did, like, go to music school and, like, really study. And my study of woodworking has been largely an independent one.
You learned on the streets.
More or less, yeah. I learned, yeah, in the woods.
In the woods.
Sort of. At its best, the two things, music and woodworking, are, like, perfectly complementary. Like, music can occupy this, like, headier space, and woodworking can give me something much more immediate and tactile and functional. And I will say that, like, after years of having my primary form of artistry being, like, songwriting and recording, but, like, even though a recording is a firm document, it still is all, you know, it's, like, in the clouds. And it is so satisfying to, like, make something that you can hold and do stuff with or sit upon.
It's beautiful, the stuff you have posted.
Thank you.
I'm going to show it to my wife. She is, as we've discussed, aspirational woodworker.
Well, I saw the sign.
Yeah. She made some outdoor furniture for our house in the country. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. Although,
although
she could probably learn some, she could probably take some lessons and do really well. She's like pretty amazing at it.
You're up in Maine, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
There's so many.
There's a lot of wood up here.
There's
much wood to be worked.
There's a lot of like woodworking schools and up there.
I gotta look it up.
Yeah.
I think that would be a good time.
Yeah.
Sam.
I could send you some ideas.
Thank you. Yes. Would love. Yeah. Would you like to do the lightning round?
Yep.
As we've already established that you are quick on your feet.
Yep.
And you don't overthink anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Lightning round. Perfect.
Here we go. Lightning
round.
Been
waiting for this.
What are you bringing to the New England potluck?
Probably an apple pie.
Nice.
Yep.
If you were asked to play in Bob Dylan's band, what instrument would you like to play of the three that you can? Or if you, maybe you play more than of the instruments you can play.
I would want to play the guitar. I would want to play the fiddle. I would want to become a better fiddle player, and then I would want to play it in Bob Dylan's band.
Do it for Bob.
Yeah.
What type of wood is the hippest? What is the coolest wood?
Are those separate questions?
Those are the same.
Hippest questions. And coolest, yeah. Okay, the coolest wood is... I'm looking around. I have a big pile of lumber over there. Can't make me choose. they're all so special in their own way. Probably the coolest wood... The coolest wood is probably black walnut.
That's a good one.
It's like... It's magical. It's beautiful.
Living or dead, who is a famous person you would like to be friends with?
Probably like John Cage, probably.
Okay. He'd be a fun friend.
Yeah. He seems like a fun friend.
He'd be the more active friend in the friendship, don't you think?
I mean, I feel like I would be so desperate to be friends with him that I would be the more active friend, but I would be trying to keep it cool. Yeah.
Name a musician I should listen to right now, and if I've already heard of them, we have to pick a new one.
Have you heard this band Wild Pink?
Hard to say.
Sounds like
I
not.
Guess not enough. Not enough for me to be like yes or no.
Yeah.
The Wild Pink.
Wild Pink. I think they're based in New York. They're a rock band that is very lyric forward. Mm-hmm. And they put out an album last year that I really love, and it's just been on my mind a lot lately.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
You got it. Two more.
Yeah.
What is your favorite method of communication?
Talking to someone in real life, in person.
F to F.
Yeah.
We call that.
Okay.
This is the last one.
Oh my God.
Where is the most beautiful place in the world?
Okay, I feel like the most beautiful place that I've ever been.
West Hartford.
Yeah. bringing it all back. Like the Pacific Ocean off of like the Washington coast is one of the more beautiful places I've ever been.
It sounds like there is
the
another
most
one.
Literal answer I can think of.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. And thank you for being literal. I know it's hard for you.
It is.
You did great. Sam Moss, thank you for talking to me today. I really enjoy your music.
Thank you.
I started making this playlist of like what my inner world sounds like, and your songs are on that playlist.
Thanks.
And I feel very at home when I listen to your record. So it's really nice to talk to you, and thanks for the new music.
Thank you so much. Yeah. This was great. Thank you for giving me time to mull over some big questions that will probably keep me up tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. This episode of Basic Folk was produced by C.J. Nungesser. Dietrich Strauss composes our music. Basic Folk is a production of The Bluegrass Situation. You can find all of our episodes there. You can search Basic Folk on the SiriusXM app. You can find us on Folk Alley's mobile app or folkalley.com. You can go to basicfolk.com, or you can find us wherever you get your shows. Thanks for listening all the way to the end, and if you enjoyed this episode, we suggest sharing it with a friend, maybe your gentle carpenter friend who loves to listen to sweet, soft music and pick flowers and is really kind to animals, but also is a woodworker and needs a new record to listen to. Send him or her or them this episode of the podcast. All right, we'll talk to you next time. Thanks for checking it out. Okay, bye.